Radio Prague News.
The Czechs' trust in EU institutions is at an all-time low. Prime Minister Sobotka has rejected the president's criticism of the government's rescue plan for a North Moravian coal mine. And fresh figures suggest that industrial growth in February accelerated to 6.7%. Czechs' trust in EU institutions is at an all-time low ahead of the upcoming 10th anniversary of the country's accession to the European Union on the 1st of May, the Čteka news agency reported. Since trust in the EU peaked at 56% in the late 1990s, Czechs' satisfaction with their country's EU membership has decreased by one-third. The slide has been confirmed by several independent polling agencies. A CVVM poll, which puts the trust rating at 34%, says that in addition to the economic crisis, the slide is due to growing resentment against EU red tape and limitations enforced by EU legislation. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka on Monday rejected President Miloš Zeman's criticism of the government's rescue plan for the North Moravian Paskov coal mine. The cabinet is planning to offer some 1.1 billion crowns to the unprofitable mine's owner, OKD, in order to keep the mine operational until 2016. President Zeman told Czech Radio on Sunday this suggested the government was helpless. However, the prime minister said his government would not remain passive and seek ways to help the mine's employees. The issue has also sparked a dispute within the coalition after the ANO party refused to back the plan. Czech industrial growth accelerated in February to 6.7% year-on-year, according to figures released by the Czech Statistics Office on Monday. Compared to January, the industry grew by 1.7%. The value of new orders rose by nearly 20%, mainly thanks to foreign demand. The growth is attributed mainly to the production of motor vehicles, metal construction, as well as rubber and plastic manufacturing. Analysts say the latest figures confirm the continuing recovery of the Czech economy and expect substantial manufacturing growth in the coming months as well. The leader of the Dawn Party, Tomio Okamura, said one of his party's candidates in the European elections, Klára Samková, had not a drop of gypsy blood in her veins. Ms. Samková has worked as attorney for a number of Romani clients in the past and was married to a Romani man. Mr. Okamura made the comment on Facebook when asked why the party, known for its anti-Romani rhetoric, had fielded Ms. Samková for the election. The comments came under criticism from Romani advocates. For her part, Klára Samková came out in defense of Mr. Okamura, saying he meant no offense. Iraq will buy 12 Czech-built L-159 aircraft, the news website Lidovky.cz reported on Monday. The contract signed by representatives of Iraq's Ministry of Defense on Sunday is worth around $200 million, the website said, quoting sources familiar with the deal. The Czech military has been trying to sell off the redundant aircraft after it only found use for 28 out of 72 planes it ordered in 1997. Last year, a U.S. training company signed a deal to buy 28 of the planes for around 500 million crowns. A photograph of a wolf taken by a camera trap in North Bohemia last week confirms the species' return to the region, the Nature Conservation Agency said. The photo, taken in a nature reserve near Doxy, some 60 kilometers north of Prague, shows a single wolf, which experts believe came from an area on the German-Polish border, where around 100 wolves live in several packs. Environmentalists say it's not clear whether the animal was part of a pack, but believe it is only a matter of time before wolf packs venture into the Czech territory as well. Wolves in Bohemia and Moravia were eradicated in the 19th century, but have started to return in recent years, mainly from Slovakia and the German-Polish border region. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The start of the week will be mostly overcast, with rain in places and occasional storms. Daytime highs will range between 16 and 20 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, tension in the governing coalition as the head of cabinet and finance minister argue over money. And this being Monday, a roundup of the sports news. Later on one, we meet a Latvian man who in 1969 staged a Jan Palach-inspired protest at the Soviet occupation of Czechoslovakia. Here, Eliahu Rips describes the last step before setting himself on fire.
to open the placard was the most difficult task in my life, because this was a point of no return.
All that coming up, so do please stay with us. In recent days, the country's finance minister, Andrei Babiš, and Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka have traded words in the media over serious issues in which they fail to see eye to eye, such as bailing out the troubled Baskov mine or providing $1 billion in support for hospitals, all at a time when Mr. Babiš is looking to save billions in the state budget. The exchanges represent the first potential cracks in the coalition. Jan Wellinger spoke to political analyst Deity Pehe, asking him how he saw the situation.
At this point, skirmishes between the finance minister and the prime minister, and between the honor movement of Mr. Babiš and the Social Democratic Party of Mr. Sobotka are really just skirmishes, meaning that both parties are trying to win some points before the elections to the European Parliament. And seen from this point of view, I think the crisis is not as serious as it may seem. However, of course, it could easily escalate. It could get out of control. And the charges that have been leveled against Mr. Sobotka in Mladá fronta Dnes, which is owned by Mr. Babiš, which are tied to the privatization of North Moravian coal mines back when Mr. Sobotka was the finance minister, those charges are quite serious, and they have a potential to damage the relationship between Mr. Babiš and Mr. Sobotka.
Mr. Sobotka last week charged that it was indeed playing an unfair role. Are the two men at this point on equal footing, the prime minister and the finance minister?
Well, unfortunately, I think that the finance minister has the upper hand at this point, because not only is he the owner of two widely read dailies, he is also, it seems, at this point, an ally of President Miloš Zeman. There seems to be some agenda on part of Mr. Zeman that is aimed at damaging Mr. Sobotka, whom he didn't want to name the prime minister in the first place. And it seems to me that Mr. Zeman is trying to win Mr. Babiš over, make him to his ally. And Mr. Babiš doesn't seem to mind at this point. So if we add these two dimensions, that is the alliance between Mr. Zeman, the president, and the ownership of some media by Mr. Babiš attacking Mr. Sobotka, then of course it's very disadvantageous for Mr. Sobotka. However, I would argue that if Mr. Babiš goes as far as toppling the government, for example, it could turn against him.
Also, if we go back further, repeatedly polls have indicated that the public is not keen on the idea of yet another set of early elections. Really, the public would like the government to sort of get down to business.
The public really doesn't want conflicts and skirmishes within the ruling coalition. We had 3 years of that under Mr. Nečas, and it was a very unstable period. I think that the public got really tired of constant fights and battles within the ruling coalition. And so Mr. Babiš really needs to be careful how he plays this, because at this point he has been the main source of those conflicts. And while those conflicts that we have seen so far have not impacted negatively his popularity and the rankings or preferences of his movement, it could easily happen if he continues with this rather combative style of politics.
Political analyst Jiří Pehe there, speaking to Radio Prague's Jan Wellinger. Now, this being Monday, it's time for our weekly sports report, for which I'm joined by Ian Willoughby.
We begin today with tennis and the news that the reigning champions, the Czech Republic, have advanced to the semi-finals of the Davis Cup. The Czechs eased past Japan in Tokyo, taking an unassailable 3-0 lead in the best-of-five tie with victory in Saturday's doubles rubber. In the absence of Tomáš Berdych, Radek's Japan ex-partner was Lukáš Rosol. And the pair clinically dispatched Tatsuma Ito and Yasutaka Uchiyama 6-4, 6-4, 6-4 to secure progression. The Japanese team were relatively inexperienced and lacked star names. However, that didn't mean it was a walk in the park for the Czechs, Russell told Czech radio.
Nobody
expected that it would be over on Saturday. That's incredible for us. It's not easy to play repeatedly in the Davis Cup as favourites, because players who are low in the rankings are still strong enough to give our players a real match. They battle and play better than in other tournaments. They're playing for the country, and that's an honour for them, especially in front of their own fans.
The Czechs eventually ran out 5-0 winners after Rosol and Jiří Veselý showed no mercy in Sunday's dead singles rubbers. Veselý, who's 20, overcame Taro Daniel 6-4, 6-4 for the first Davis Cup win of his career.
It's a beautiful feeling. I'd say it's another dream that I fulfilled, winning my first Davis Cup match. The first is always the sweetest and the most important. I really felt very relaxed here this week. I believe that if I played, I'd perform well, and I think that was confirmed today.
The Czechs will play host to France in the semi-finals in September, with non-playing captain Jaroslav Navratil saying he hopes Berdych will return for that tie. If his charges were to go on and lift the title for the third year in a row, it would be the first such hat-trick since the US won the third of five in a row back in 1970. Soccer and its as was in the Czech top flight after the weekend's action. Leaders Sparta Prague are still 8 points clear after grinding out a 1-0 away win over Slovácko, thanks to Ladislav Krejčí's strike. However, there was controversy after the match. The head of the Czech league's referees, Dagmar Damková, told reporters a penalty should have been awarded to Slovácko for a handball by Sparta's Josef Hushbauer when defending a free kick. Viktoria Plzeň is still second after a 3-0 victory over Dukla in the capital. Meanwhile, Baník Ostrava and Bohemians 1905 remain in the two relegation spots with 19 points each after both suffered defeat. Just above them are Slavia Prague with 22 points and a game in hand. That's all the sport for today.
A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in the last part of our programme, we meet a Latvian man who in 1969 staged a protest at the Soviet occupation of Czechoslovakia when, inspired by Czech student Jan Palach, he set himself on fire in central Riga. Eliahu Rips is Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
When Jan Palach burned himself to death in January 1969 over the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia, his radical protest was echoed by a number of young men in the Eastern Bloc. Among them was Eliahu Rips, who put a match to his petrol-doused clothing in the Latvian capital Riga on April 13, 1969. But unlike the others, Rips survived after passers-by put out the flames. Now a maths professor in Israel, he was in Prague last week to speak at the Václav Havel Library. Sitting on a park bench in the Jewish quarter, Eliahu Rips told me that like Palach, he and many Latvians had been bitterly disappointed by the crushing of the 1968 Prague Spring.
You could go in the street and you see every face was glowing. And now it was the opposite of it. And you see, you had, and also you had no way to get an outlet to your feelings. Just, you have to shut up the mouth, and this was for months. And this kind of feeling accumulated, and because this information of what Jan Palach did, it also did some kind of way to ignite this. And then at some days it exploded. You see, it was so bad feeling that I cannot even say to anybody how I feel about this. And then one day it was of any cost to do it, and whatever.
But why did you take it so personally?
I don't feel that it was only my personal feelings. It, to a very large extent, was general feelings then. But it was so a difficult feeling that one have to swallow everything and just to leave it. And you see, in this age of I was 20, maybe I took it in such a way.
What were you hoping to achieve, or did you have any targets in mind, so to speak?
No, not at all, because then I saw the kind of the Soviet region kind of eternal. I didn't believe then that it something will change. Also, I did not think that anything in my protest will change anything. That just to express this kind of feeling, and so be it.
Did you think about how your action might impact, for example, your family or your friends?
Of course, this is a shadow side of it. People may think about the whole world, but he also has parents, and in this case, the parents of the only son. So I cannot say what overweights, you see, but then also felt that this is a way that the power takes all of us, because all of us are related in some way, and this is a way that the grip of the power of everybody of us. And normally one should shut up because of relatives, of because the people that are closely related to him.
Did you tell anybody what you were going to do?
Not of course. This would be only to bring trouble.
Could you describe for listeners who don't know the story what actually happened on that day, the 13th of April 1969?
Okay, I had some things to prepare. It took several days to write the placard and then to have this suit that I had on me, and then I had to have some gas, and then I had some place to store it nearby this place, and then I took it. It was in the afternoon. I went to this place. I put a suit on myself. It was already, the gas was in the inner side of it. Then I had to open the placard. I protest against the occupation of Czechoslovakia in Russian. Actually, to open the placard was the most difficult task in my life, because this was a point of no return. Until this point, I could take everything, go back, and nothing happened. But just to open this is, from this point, it is irreversible. So I remember until now this it happened. Then I had to take the match and to fire, but it was easier, because you see the whole tremendous fear against the Soviet system. So this was a moment of the challenge.
What were your feelings at the moment when you lit the match?
It was just a technicality. The difficult thing was to open the placard.
After you did that, after you set yourself on fire, I think soon afterwards some passers-by put out the fire, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, now some minutes, I remember the flames, but then some minutes I don't remember. But then I was told there was a group of passers-by that extinguished me. And then I saw a big crowd, hostile. But maybe the people who felt otherwise would not say anything, I guess. And then somebody went out from this crowd and arrested me.
How did you feel about the fact that these passers-by had extinguished the flames?
You see, now when I know that person is not supposed to take his own life, it is also a kind of a murder. So I can only say that it is easier to me for things this way. But when I went to this protest, still the fear of the Soviet power was so big that it was easier to me imagine to be dead than in their hands. Therefore, I must say that the people who went, for example, to demonstrations, they knew very well that they will end up in prison this evening. So this is a higher kind of courage.
You suffered, I think, only minor burning on your hands and arms. I guess it could have been much worse.
It could be much, much worse. Yes, it was only some burns here on the neck, and it is nothing more than this.
Later, what happened? You were imprisoned or you were put into some kind of a mental hospital, is that right?
Okay. First, I was arrested by KGB. They brought me to the mental ward as a routine for any case of suicide. The next morning, they returned with the order of arrest. Then they brought me to the Riga prison. And then they opened the investigation. Then the usual practice then was to declare people that protested as mentally ill. So they had a psychiatric expertise which decided that I should be given this, the court should order a forced cure. And then in several months later, in autumn of this year, there was this court. I wasn't present because they just decided not mentally able to understand what is going on. So, and then they decided to put me to this forced cure, psychiatric cure, and then I was, they placed me in the Riga psychiatric ward, Sarkandaugava, and I was there about a year and a half. Due to the activities of Vladimir Bukovsky, the famous Russian dissident who collected material about this kind of psychiatric persecutions, and he sent it abroad, and then this actually happened. I will stress that his activity actually helped to end this, and then was another commission that this time decided to take out the forced cure, and then by the court they took it out, and then I returned home.
And not long afterwards you moved to Israel, and you've been there for almost all of your life. Right. I'm wondering, how does it feel for you to be here today in Prague, which was kind of the inspiration for your action?
You see, I'm here for the second time. The first time was in 2009. So the historians that are actually researching this period and the actions of people were invited me then, and I felt extremely good with them, just very good persons and very good friends. And then when they invited me now, I was unable to resist the temptation.
My last question has to be, how do you look back today on what you did in April 1969?
In a sense, the world changed very much. In another sense, it remained the same. You see, I hope that at least in this part of the world, these dreadful days will not return. But nothing could be said about the rest of the world.
But what about your own action? I mean, do you condone what the young you did?
In one sense, it was very important to me to be able to express what I felt then and to overcome all this barrier of fear. But of course, I brought a very difficult pain on my relatives and my... So one cannot see what is waiting.
That was Eliyahu Ripzin, Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One, and it's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. This is Danielle Lazarova saying thanks for joining us today, and take care.